Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Fret Success Guitar Show. I'm your host, Dan Clayton, and today we have a very special treat for you in store. We're going to dive into a conversation with someone that is incredibly talented, develops soulful melodies and a master at the guitar, to be honest. Hailing from the Great White North of Canada originally, and still there, which is where I moved to recently in the past few years. He's captured the hearts of music lovers worldwide, I would say, with his incredible, intimate and inspiring vocals. So not just a guitar player, the songwriting's pretty special as well. And the guitar prowess, to be honest, leaves me pretty much in awe. Found him recently in the past couple of years, and it's nice to have him on the show to chat. So you may have already heard some of his previous albums, How Long, Familiar Ground, Headway, and either of those Mile End records, which are fantastic kind of instrumental albums to listen to. Wonderful things to drive to. I do it quite often. His music kind of weaves, I think, when I analyze it a little bit, like blues rock, a bit of folk maybe, but kind of doesn't really come from anywhere and comes from everywhere at the same time. So it's creating that kind of unique sound, which is interesting, and we'll talk about that hopefully. So he's a great storyteller as well in the music, and reflects on some of life's journeys and that we can all relate to, and moments of self-discovery as well. So I've been lucky to get a listen to his album that's coming out on the September 8th called Reasons Why. And he's heading out on tour to promote that end of August, I think, starting with a few festival dates in Europe, playing the US, Canada, and even stopping in Calgary and Edmonton, which is great because we sometimes don't get a deal of music to listen to here. So I've got tickets to that show, and he's graciously agreed to have a chat before then. So without further ado, let's give a warm welcome to Ariel Posen. How are you doing?
Hello. Thanks for the intro. I'm good. How are you doing?
Yeah, not too bad. Where are you based at the moment then?
Montreal.
Montreal. Okay. So how long have you been out there?
A couple of years.
So what took you out there?
My wife. She moves around. So I follow her. I can be wherever, you know?
Okay.
Like I was telling you off camera. Portable musician, like most of us are.
Yeah,
we can kind of just be anywhere, which is great.
So yeah, I've not actually made it out to Montreal. It's quite a bustling kind of area, isn't it? Lots of stuff going on, and a bit European in a way, is it?
Yeah, I'd say so. Like summers are crazy here, I think, because the weather is so good, and they've just had so many great festivals and things going on every year forever. So a lot of people and a lot of tourists come in, and it's usually very busy here, but it's also just busy here in the winter because it's just like cool cities just have people here always. Cool. Where in England are you from?
Originally a town called Blackpool, which isn't that well known. Have you heard of that place?
I've heard of it. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, it has a weird tower that kind of looks like a shitty version of the Eiffel Tower. So we have that that's famous landmark, and nearer to Liverpool, Manchester probably. So quite same as you were saying, Montreal, a lot of music scene around that. Obviously, a lot of bands, including well-known bands, come from those kind of regions. So I was a bit spoiled. A
couple of good bands, yeah.
A couple of decent, half-decent ones, yeah. So the new album, thanks for letting us listen to it in advance of it coming out. I mean,
oh, yeah.
Full of like rhythmic surprises, melodies that I can't really stop humming, to be honest, like, and that kind of raw emotion, which seems to be a bit different from previous ones maybe. But I want to discuss that in a little bit, but I guess seeing as this is a guitar show, we won't dwell on this too much, but like, can you share a bit about your musical journey and how you first kind of got into playing the guitar? What's your kind of first memories?
Yeah, of course. I come from a musical family. Both my parents are musicians. They were in a band. They still are in the band. They just don't really play that often. But my upbringing was like, 2 months old, I was already on an airplane flying to like Vancouver for Expo for a gig. Something, you know, that was my upbringing, just like backstage or hanging with my grandparents while my parents played shows on weekends or played festivals, and we'd make family trips in the summers out of festivals. And then, yeah, got started on piano very early, about six-ish. It was great. I'm grateful for that. I wouldn't consider myself a great pianist, but it was the mid-90s and all my friends started playing guitar, and everything I was watching on TV, like Much Music and stuff like that, was bands, and guitar was super popular at that time. Mm-hmm. And that kind of gave that, mixed with the Beatles anthology, which had just come out at that time, 1994, 1995, and our parents just kind of just, I say our, me and my brother, my parents just basically raised us on that stuff. But then I had this other side of modern music at the time, modern, you know, Green Day, Nirvana, yeah. Soundgarden, Rage Against the Machine, Chili Peppers, a bunch of bands like that. So that was really more so what made me want to play guitar. So I started, and this is the summarized version, but I always loved playing, played in bands with friends. And then when I was about 16, I heard Stevie Ray Vaughan for the first time. And that was the moment I went, oh, I should probably take music and guitar seriously, because that sounds mind blowing. And I never had like the feeling of, I want to sound like that. I want to be able to do, oh yeah, it was Scuttle Button. So of course I was like, I want to be able to play that song. But it just inspired me to start taking everything that I was doing musically more serious. I was already playing some gigs and working kind of as a musician at a young age. And once that happened, it started this journey of just putting my head down, playing all day, every day, gigging every day. All my friends were in like-minded positions and mindsets, and we were all just like inspired. And in some ways, you know, there's been a couple breaks where I've brought my head up and for some air, but not much. It's kind of been nonstop since then. And like from, it wasn't just blues. It really wasn't blues. It just happened to be like, I think a lot of guitar players have had that effect from hearing someone like Stevie for the first time.
Yeah.
Because it's relatable, this bluesy rock kind of thing, but there's just so much flair and aggression in it and finesse that it makes it sound so elegant and amazing, really. And it just inspires you. But like playing the blues and stuff wasn't something I was looking to focus on fully. I just wanted to be a great musician, mm-hmm. and I wanted to work as a musician. So I started working on as many different genres as I can. I listened to all kinds of music, from jazz to classical, to bluegrass, to country, to rock, folk, like basically everything I can get my hands on. And then I'd listen to bass players, piano players, singers, horn players, drummers. Did I say that already? Like literally everything. And I started getting even more and more inspired, not from guitar, than I did from guitar, even though I put a lot of time into all the classic guitar players that, you know, we all know and love.
When you're stepping away from it as more of like a guitar thing, is that why you sort of formed your sound a little bit? Because it's, you can hear a bit of Stevie in your playing, but not like as much as you might think. It's kind of melodic, soulful, and kind of more vocal a little bit, and just, it's something I haven't really heard that much before, Ariel. I just wondered, was that a conscious thing to go more down that vocalized kind of, it's almost like a trumpet or, you know, a lead instrument, but that use of slide that makes it sound that way. Do you know what kind of made that come about?
I think that's just my voice, really. That's how I hear music, and that's how I express the sounds in my head. But like having your own voice is truly this intimate thing, and it wouldn't exist without influences. You know, everyone, even Stevie's iconic sound, we're just using him as an example, I guess, but someone like him, you know, he wouldn't have such a recognizable sound or voice if it wasn't for his heroes or his influences. And I think I'm going to include myself in this. We've all kind of, you know, taken our influences, idolize them, and then maybe transcribe them, and then pick them apart, and then we say, okay, you know what, this is amazing, and like you're amazing, you've inspired me, but like I think I've taken a couple bits from you, and I'm just going to leave you here now, and I'm just going to keep, I think made up my own thing in my head of how I want to say these things, and I'm just going to go forward with that. And no matter what, like even if you don't realize, if you play music with people, it could be different instruments and stuff, like they will get into your ear subconsciously, and you will be constantly evolving ideas and sounds as a musician. Mm-hmm. And I think it's just a mixture of that. It's a matter of like not, I don't know. I've always tried to run the opposite direction. Like whatever I hear, if I hear like 2 to 3 to 4 to 5 people kind of doing a similar thing, even if it's a great similar thing, I just have, I've always had a tendency to, okay, what, it's not about being better. It's not about being faster. It's not about being flashier. It's just about being kind of different and saying something in the same kind of meaning and having the same kind of intent, but from a different direction. And I think that's what I've always held on to. And that is what is like the catalyst for my sound or having my own voice. And I think it's the same for anybody, really. Not to speak for other people, but.
Yeah, I think it's true. Like you do start to do that. And I do a bit of that where you take a bit and you go, right. And you also don't, I've never been a person that wants to drill into an artist so much that you kind of ruins it for you a little bit as well, because you expose everything of nuance about it.
Right.
The new album Reasons Why, like it's, I found it interesting that it's kind of a classic, you know, 10 track album. And, you know, I don't know if that's always what I had in my head, that it's the 10 tracks on the album, but
as opposed to what?
Well, sometimes it gets longer and like, you know, Chili Peppers did that double album and stuff.
Oh, it's just, yeah,
it seems like that nice round number of songs. And you must have wrote a lot more before deciding what was on the album, but I'm kind of curious, you know, this new album, it's a bit more raw, I guess. And I don't know, it's musically excellent, but I just wondered what inspired this particular album. And as we dive into the melodies, what kind of stories do you think you're sharing through this particular set?
Well, story-wise, I'm sharing personal experience. I'm sharing other people's experience, and I'm sharing essentially experience looking at it from afar too. So it's not all just my stories. It's not all people I know's stories, but it's this idea of just how in society really we act and how we react to things. And when, you know, stuff happens, why are we like this? Why is this person saying that? Why do I feel this way? Et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, had a lot of time. It was a time when we were all at home, and took me a few months, but once I started feeling that creativity in a big way, I wrote 30 songs. I wrote as many songs as I possibly could. And what happens when you get to write that many songs is you just have good perspective. It's really clear which are the strongest. And even if it's not the strongest, which are the most cohesive together? Because there was 5 songs out of that batch that I really loved, but I just didn't see them with the 10 that I picked. So I put them out last year, actually, and it was called the Downtown EP.
Yep.
I really love those songs, but it just made sense to keep them separate. And, you know, the other 15 that weren't used, you know what? I still like them. They're good. Maybe I'll do something with some of them down the road. But for this collection, it's just, instead of feeling like every song needed to have a purpose, it just was like, let's just go with the ones that are the ones. Mm-hmm. And that's what happened. Just pick those ones. And that's the album, really.
I mean, it's a nice package of songs. And when I was listening to it, I put it on like a all loop thing. Uh-huh. And then I didn't really notice where the start and the end of the album was, because it just was so cohesive as a set that it just kind of kept you going in a flow.
Oh, good.
And I found that quite interesting. I was like, oh crap, like I've heard this song 3 times now, and I didn't even notice, because it was just keeping you in that kind of sense of, and every time with another listen, it was like, oh, I noticed that, and oh, this is different, and this is nuanced. And
well, I appreciate you listening to it in succession, like a listening experience. We live in an age of singles and short attention spans, and I find that the experience of listening through an album from front to back, which I love. I'm like old school like that too. That's what I grew up doing, listening to CDs, even cassettes. That's how I like to listen to a record. And I hope that's how people listen to my records. I like to think that all the songs, you could listen to them, pick your favorites and do your thing, but also have it kind of feel like you're on a journey when you listen to the whole thing. And I've tried to go with that mentality and approach with all my records.
It's good. And you can tell you've thought a lot about what song goes where, and It just kind of works. Like, so you've done all that hard work. Why wouldn't you just listen? But yeah, I know what you're saying. I'm up in and out. Like I like listening to a shuffle mix, but I also like listening to this album and that album front to back. And you just spend a day doing, you know, tidying up or cleaning up, and you stick it on and you just lose yourself in what's going on. So
kind of takes me out of it sometimes, listening to a record that you know intimately, that you know that you've been listening to forever, and a hit's a hit. And I'm not talking my own music. I'm just saying, let's say it's a song from a band who's gigantic. Mm-hmm. You know, if Hit Me With Your Best Shot comes on, it, without context, it's Hit Me With Your Best Shot. It's great.
Yep.
But if it's a record like, I don't know, pick any record. I watched the Alanis Morissette documentary yesterday.
Okay.
Let's say it's, you're listening. Okay, that's even a bad example too, because that Jagged Little Pill record is gigantic. maybe picking a song from a record that wasn't a single that you associate being after this song and coming before that song and having, you know, that beginning, middle, and end aspect to a record like a movie, you know, hearing a song like that out of context, if you know the music so intimately, can not devalue the song in any way, but it can take you, it feels like something's missing.
Hopes that's the flow, doesn't it? Basically.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I get that when you listen to songs live and they mix the setup and then you're like, you're waiting for it to go into that next one and it's like, ah.
Yeah, I've been to a few shows this past week of big, like, famous bands at festivals here, and they're all at this point where they just have too many hits and they're just playing songs. It's all there. First of all, they're just trying to put it, I think there's a difference between having a good set list, like a good show, and then album order. Like, those don't have to be the same. I think those can be different, but they're trying to squeeze in all these, as many songs as possible, and they're just doing like verse choruses of like five or six songs. So they start the song and it's like, oh yeah. And then they bail on it and go to the next thing, which I totally get. They want to please everybody and play the songs, but it's a double-edged sword where it's like, it's amazing if you have that many songs that people want to hear, but can't play them all. But you know, some people only want to hear a verse or chorus because, like I said, we're in this like short attention span era.
I guess one thing I really took from the album, especially, was how interesting, I guess intellectual is not the right word, but it's engaging rhythms are really the stars for me in this album.
Oh, cool.
The drum elements like complement the music so well. And I wondered, did you think much about that? Is that a drummer that's you've got at hand? Like, what was the rhythm selection like for you? Because each song is so different, but yet coherent. So it's interesting.
Cool. Thank you. I know I'm known as a guitar player and known for sounds and tones and whatever, but like when on a recording, it's all about the rhythm section. If a rhythm section isn't amazing, it doesn't really do anything for me. So this record and my last record, Headway, JJ Johnson is playing drums on it. Do you know who that is?
Yes, I've heard the name. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So he just brings this weight and this musicality to the studio that it's not that no one else has it. It's just like you were saying, everyone has a voice, and his voice, you know, when you ask him to do, hey, lay it down, do this most simple thing, and everything he does is simple, but there's an art to simplicity and there's an art to less is more. And it's these little moments where he does something that is just his stream of consciousness that kind of becomes magic. And then there's these other times where it's the most simple of things he's playing, but you get 10 drummers to play the same simple thing, it's just not going to feel, it might sound like it, but it's not going to feel like it. And he's just got magic for that. And you know, he's great. And he gets my music. He's a dear friend. He knows what we're going for. And he, like, just as I hope we're inspiring him on a session to play something great, he's inspiring me and everybody else around. Just like, it's a give and give, back and forth situation for inspo.
One that stuck out for me was Time Can Only Tell.
Oh, yeah.
trick on your mind. Spin you around while it runs a straight line.
Time. And it's just that kind of verse theme. It's slightly unsettling, like as a song, like harmonically, it's just a bit like always got you a little bit on edge. And but the rhythm is kind of this constant kind of rhythmic kind of chug, like a ticking of a clock. And it just felt like it matched the song well and the lyrics well. And like, I just, it was just, yeah, capturing that and then weaving that together. And then the chorus kind of then creates a sense of relief. And then it's the verse is back into this kind of like, I don't know, that's the way I kind of heard it. But I just wondered if that was something that you thought about when you were writing that track.
Yes and no. Lyrically, the funny enough, the music didn't really, wasn't dictated from the lyrics at all. I just, that song was written with the main guitar part that you hear, which is just a four chord loop. And I heard it like a string section, like a gigantic chamber orchestra. I guess it wouldn't be a chamber orchestra if it was a big string section. It'd just be a string section. And I don't know. That song would be definitely at the top of the list of like a slightly different departure for me compared to my other records. And it's one of my favorite songs on the record. I so badly wanted it to be a single, but I purposely just decided, you know what? I think this one should stay as a surprise once the record comes out. First track. It's good for that. But to answer your question, yeah, it wasn't really... Yeah, it wasn't super tied to the lyrics. The lyrics are basically talking about asking, it's about looking back at everything and wondering why we feel certain ways when time passes, and if things we did, what's the point of everything, and why does everything happen for a reason? It's basically if you had a chance to speak to time.
Okay.
And be like, hey, what the fuck? Like, what is this really? Why is this? And it's essentially saying, the verses are trying to say that you kind of have an idea of it's almost like as if time was a person. And then the choruses are this question, like if it has its reasons, keeps it to himself, maybe it's a secret time. Like, it's basically saying, okay, I've said all this stuff that I think I know in the verses, but I guess at the end of the day, we won't really know. It's not telling us.
Yeah. No, it's an intriguing track.
Cool. I'm glad you like it.
Caught me a bit off guard. It was like, yeah, this is cool. I guess one thing that the other part of the album, which was the organ type sound and that kind of bass groove in I Wish That We Never Met, you know, that kind of go that compliment, and that's so cool. That idea come about? Was that like a guitar thing again and you just kind of work from there? But it just sounds like there's so much cohesion between those bass and organ, and you've picked, like, it feels almost like an organ, maybe a guitar sound that you've manipulated, but it just sounds so unique.
It's actually both. It's what you're referring to is guitar.
Okay.
But there is organ on there too, doing something to complement it. Basically, when I put together any song and I think it has potential, I'll make a full demo of it. I'll either get someone to play drums, or I'll just program drums and I will play everything, do one pass vocal, nothing fancy, just something as reference. And certain songs I'll immediately kind of pick something as a hook. And you've probably heard the term demoitis, which means, okay. Well, those of you that don't know, demoitis means you listen to your demos too much and you kind of get attached. And when you do it for real, you kind of can't let go to the elements that you did or how it sounded on the demo. So I'm guilty for it, but I'm also aware of it. So I'm kind of both. I'm kind of guilty for it and I'm not. But I put down this line of just harmonized lines descending. And it just felt like it was it. It felt like it was the part. Sometimes you just know. And a lot of times for me in production, from a demo to the final product, it's like, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. If there's anything you question, okay, well, maybe revisit it and see if there's something else that can happen. But if something just feels right, and if you've listened to this 100 times and you feel something from this one part, there's a really good chance that it's meant to be there and that you don't have to change it. Just like do it the same way. And it was kind of like that with that part. But it was just 4 guitar tracks, one playing the melody, an octave playing the melody, and then a third above, and then another third above up the octave. And they both had this, they all had this Leslie, like a rotary Leslie cabinet, I think some kind of overdrive or fuzz and something else. And it just gives it this really spitty, yeah, kind of organ-like sound. When they're all together, it sounds fun. So yeah, I think I pay a lot of attention to the elements to try to make it, you know, cohesive and make everything have a place and purpose instead of just a bunch of noise.
Yeah, definitely with the bass guitar doing its own thing to complement rather than just playing the same fucking thing as the guitar or whatever. So
right,
you could definitely tell on that album that it had its own place and voice and, you know, reason to be there, if you like.
Nice.
Yeah, I mean, the one that stuck out a little bit, the song is Broken But I'm Fine, from a sound perspective, like it's more like on a slightly poppier, you know, side, and soulful and gospel blues almost.
Yeah.
But the guitar work on it is kind of like, it feels like a harmonious kind of horn section that kind of dances with the vocals. And then you have like a call and response thing going on.
Restless by design. Up against the wall. Underneath it all. I'm broken but I'm fine.
Like, that's just awesome. Like, how did that kind of come about?
I'd say that one and Time Can Only Tell are like the two biggest departures musically, like just exploring kind of new, it's not a new genre, but just exploring new avenues. Because that song started when we recorded it in the studio, when I demoed it, it was like a very guitar trio kind of vibe. So it was, you know, I can't look back, it was very like 16th-y bouncy guitar filling around everything, and the bass was very dun, 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 and the drums were still the same. And on the demo it felt good, it felt raw and fun. And then when we got to the studio, it still felt raw and fun, and we recorded it like that. And this is the first record I've done where half of it was not by choice, because there was Omicron kind of in the middle of our recording sessions. So we had to just take a month or two off before we could reschedule anything again. And in that time, I started to fall really out of love with the guitar vibe. And it just felt busy. It felt very guitar-y. You know, it just felt too jammy, and I wanted it to feel more hooky and like a song, songy.
Yeah, so I know what you're getting at. Yeah.
I just kind of stripped everything back, except the vocals, the drums, and like the lead guitars. We kept all, and the bridge guitar, the bridge was all good. But I just was hearing this idea of like a synthy kind of bass with that drum going dun, 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 and Julian, my bass player, was just open to trying some different things. And I was actually on tour. We were doing some shows for opening for Bahamas. This is almost, I guess, a year and a half ago. I don't even know when it was anymore. Spring 2022. And I was in St. John's, Newfoundland, because the first couple of shows I was just doing solo, and then the guys met me. And yeah, I just said, send me a bunch of stuff, try a bunch of different things in this vibe. And he sent me a handful of tracks, and I kind of pieced them all together. And then I doubled a lot of it on guitar with a bunch of envelope filters and weird sounds. So it sounds like it's one track, but there's a bunch in it. And that just led to that. Once that started feeling good, it was like everything could breathe because it was always on this. So instead of a guitar that had to be like filling, it was just vocal. It was kind of like a call and answer thing. And I just went with it. Was it the right direction? Who knows? That's not for me to decide. It's, you know, if people like it, they like it. But I feel a lot better about it than where it started. And I'm just glad I had the time to sit with it and try some different things. Because sometimes you got to do that. Like that would have been a perfect example of demoitis, where I could have been stubborn enough to just sit with the original idea and be like, oh no, I can't see outside of like the busy licky guitar the whole time or the bouncy bass. It just needs to be this way. But luckily I'm a few records deep now, so I can kind of look at it from the outside and go, hey, don't be stupid. Rework it. You know? Yeah,
stop it.
Stop it. Yeah.
Man You Raised kind of resonates simply yet profoundly for me. The kind of way it builds, start